6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Well, let's get it. Welcome to the Dear Son Show. We have meaningful conversations about life through the lens of fatherhood. It's for fathers, those with fathers, and the fatherless, so nobody's left out. These are the conversations we want our sons to access as they grow through life into manhood, so no topics off limits. I'm your host, D. Johns, and we got a fabulous guest, an amazing guest. Educator extraordinaire, Mr. Carvell Dangerfield is in the building. How you feeling, my brother?
Hey, man, I'm feeling good. I appreciate you for welcoming me here, you know, on the podcast, and I'm ready to get into it.
Well, get into it we shall, man. Always want to check with my guests to make sure they're in a real good headspace before we get started, because, you know, I'd rather not if we're not in a good headspace. So just confirm for me, everything good?
Everything good over here, man. You know, these type of conversations are had all the time, and they just need to be documented, in my opinion.
Absolutely, man. That's kind of the brain or the brand behind the show is having conversations that ideally would happen between a biological father and son, but often don't,
right,
for a number of reasons.
Most definitely.
And we'll get into your story. Just like if I start the timer, y'all know how it goes. Time started now. Where's home, man? Where you from?
I'm originally from Arlington, Grand Prairie area.
Okay.
So I'm from Arlington, Grand Prairie. Went to high school at Sam Houston High School. Moved to Houston because of college. Went to Texas Southern,
okay,
HBCU.
My co-host will be happy to hear that, Jay Black. I don't know
what TSU.
Yeah, I don't know what years he was there, but it's been quite a few people that I've met since I've been here, and a couple that have been on the show that TSU.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's my home school. You know, I got a master's online, so
okay,
I represent that school as well, but. TSU is where I was developed and I was made, you know.
Well, what was the black college experience for you? Because I've been on the campuses I never actually attended. My daughter attended her first semester. That particular experience wasn't for her. What was it like for you? What did you get out of it?
I think it really depends on where you come from and how you were raised. Because you have to be prepared for college and or life after high school, no matter what.
Sure.
Black college is black college. You're going to get those experiences that you won't get anywhere else. It depends on where you go to school, because not everybody went to school with the majority of black people and or mixture. Some people, my school was mixed. So I went to school with a diverse group of people.
Okay.
But of course, we're comfortable around ourselves, but some people don't want that all day long, you know, and they think that there's too many distractions. So the experience was all over the place,
okay,
to be honest. If you're not prepared for the world and or disciplined enough to be structured and to check on yourself, check on your business at the offices and things like that, you're going to have issues everywhere else. Because I went to two different schools. One of them was online.
Okay.
But I've had the master's experience was way different,
yeah,
from my undergrad experience. And HBCU is one of those things that you get so much gratification from just in all aspects, not just the party. And I know all kids think that they're going to go to college and just party, party, party away. But they have every HBCU, in my opinion, is worth going to.
Gotcha.
They're professional. They have everything that the PWIs have.
Sure.
But you just, like I said, you take from it whatever you, however you was raised. Like if you're raised and you have support going into college, say, handle your business, then that's what you're going to do. Yeah. You're still going to do both. But,
makes sense.
You know.
Makes sense. My PWI experience, I mean, I think if you're looking for a party, you'll find it wherever.
Wherever you're.
Like, because, you know, students are creative enough to create that environment wherever they are. So if you're looking for distractions, there'll be a distraction at every turn.
Every time.
If you focus, I came out of high school, graduated with honors, went to PWI right out of high school and failed miserably because I just wasn't prepared for the freedom.
Right.
It was a culture shock. It was co-ed dorms by like suites. So two rooms joined by a bathroom. Guys, the next set over could be, it was girls from my high school across the hall.
Right.
So I was definitely, we had 24-hour visitation. It was wild because they had 24-hour co-ed visitation, but no overnight guests of the opposite sex. I don't know how you manage that.
All right.
If they can be there any of the 24 hours and they're right across the hall, but that is interesting.
I like to tell people, I always teach my kids about me first and always let them know it's everybody didn't always do it the perfect way.
I didn't.
And then let me give you my, you asked me about the black college.
Yeah.
It took me 8 years to get my undergrad.
A 7 for me.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
We
understand.
Yeah.
That wasn't because I didn't know what I was doing. I was an AB honor roll student all my life.
Yeah.
But when I got to college, that's why I'm glad I'm on here. I've came up with this theory within the last, not just me, but I came up with this theory within the last few years. One of the most important areas of a child's life is after high school.
Sure.
Because everything you done fussed at them and told them about, they're actually putting into action now.
Hopefully.
So if you don't, hopefully.
Yeah.
But they won't and will at the same time. Right. But if you don't have support to say, hey, these are the next steps, or this is what you do to back those decision-making things up, then you're gonna fall short here and there. So I was, I spent 8 years in college. I would do great. And if you know college, fall semester, I'm on it.
Reverse for me.
But when the sun came out in spring.
Showtime.
And of course, I don't want to blame it on the lifestyle, but I did started DJing.
Yeah.
When I was in college. So I can't say that was a distraction, but it played a factor in it. And I just would back and forth semesters. I would do good, do bad, do good. I don't know how many times I was on academic probation.
Yeah.
But I never allowed it to get to a point where I couldn't come back. But as I grew up, all I knew was college. In my head, I knew that I was going to college. I just didn't have the answer to after college. So I finally got it together.
I was close. And actually, I don't know if they told me I couldn't come back or not, because I think my first semester GPA was like a 0.14 or something like that. And when I got it, and I told y'all, chill, y'all know I tell stories the same over and over. But when I got it, I went to my dad. Actually, we were coming back from a Christmas trip to Syracuse. I'm from Virginia. So we drove to Syracuse as a family to see my aunt and uncle, my mom's sister. So my mom had the mail stopped. When we came back, she picked up the mail. And of course, what was in there, my transcript
for
my first semester. So we're in the car. She's sorting through the mail. She hands it to me. I already know the deal. And I didn't want to open it, but it was no reason to prolong it. I opened it and I created this dramatic effect like, man, college ain't for me. This is too hard. I'm trying to gain sympathy. And my dad was like, okay, you're not wasting my money no more. I was like, you're supposed to say, nah, son, keep going. Keep trying. He was like, Monday when I get up and go to work, you get up and leave my house and don't come back before me unless you got a job.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the introduction to real life. Because college wasn't actually, I didn't treat it like real life.
Right.
Because whatever you want to do or don't want to do in college, they'll let you, provided that you're not harming somebody, but nobody's chasing you down to come to class.
Correct.
I would show up to class and there would be a test that I had no idea because I hadn't been there so frequently. And I thought, man, I was good in chemistry in high school, but college and high school are not the same. It required different things of you. At least my experience was.
Right.
High school was a lot of read and regurgitate. I could make some flashcards the day before a test and remember the facts and give them the facts. When it came to college and they're like, all right, take this scenario and apply this theory that we presented to you. And then we're going to grade it subjectively in a lot of cases. I wasn't ready for that.
These days, those type of strategies are long gone, unfortunately, because kids, they Google everything.
Yeah.
And they think those type of research strategies, I see it every day.
Yeah.
But yeah, college was, I had to figure out who I was and what I wanted. I changed my major 3 times.
Twice.
That was a part of it.
Yep. What'd you start out as?
Electronic engineer.
I was a chemical engineer.
It sounded good too.
Yeah.
Until that was the first time I was approached by work that I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I don't think I was ready for.
I think it was, I forgot which coding it was then. It might have been C++. When that was in front of me, I was like, you know what? Nope.
Mm-hmm.
Not even. And the reason I chose that major is because my dad suggested it.
Right.
But based on how I performed in high school, which was logical. And I definitely want to get into your thoughts on how children are guided to certain careers or post high school decisions. But first, let's understand what your actual role is in education.
So I am a teacher first, and any teacher that says otherwise, they'll be lying to you.
Teachers are
teachers first, but we have other roles that sometimes are more important and depends on who you are.
Sure.
I'm a coach as well.
Okay.
I'm a sponsor. A lot of my coworkers call me Mr. Stipend because I do a lot at my school.
Gotcha.
I came into this career with an open mind and an eager heart to help.
Sure.
So my hand was raised all the time. I do.
Go-to guy.
And when I came to the school that I'm at, it was a lot of need to be filled. And I filled a lot of those needs, and I still do those to this day. So I do a lot at my school. So I am a teacher first, and I just wanted to make sure that was clear. I have to teach first, and that's my main role. And of course, I coach, and I do a lot of other stuff. But we'll be getting into administration. I just got my master's in educational administration. So I will be getting into administration. Whether it's a principal, whether it's at the district level, something like that. So that's where I'm going. And the reason why I started that is because of what was happening in the classroom. I am limited to how I can help your students, the students in the classroom, because of our roles and titles.
Can you pull that string a little bit? Like, what does that mean?
In education, there's a lot of different ideologies that are put in one place. And the main one that matters, not everyone should matter, but the main one that is navigating those ideologies is the principal. The one who navigates his ideologies is the district. So there's a lot of politics in education that you can't do much about, that it's kind of hard to deal with sometimes.
Mm.
So you have to... every teacher has to understand. Everybody wants to be heard. Every meeting that we have, everybody wants to say something, but we don't have that much time realistically, right? Everybody wants to tell their opinion. Hey, we should do it this way. We should do it that way. So over the years, I wanted to do so much, but I couldn't because of my title.
So how do you pick and choose? Well, let me not set you up that way. Do you ever consider going against the grain?
All the time.
Okay. How do you like? What's that decision tree?
Confidence and professionalism. Teachers have a very, very integral and powerful portion of education that some don't understand that they have.
Mm-hmm.
We don't run the school, but we run the school at the same time. It's hard to get rid of a teacher, especially in these days and time. But teachers, unless you blatantly just... did something to a child, a harmful, you know, something to a child, it's hard to get rid of a teacher.
Yeah.
So I go into it with the best interest of the kids, not me, right. Not what I feel. Of course, my feelings are in it, but my passion is leading that, and the kids are the most important thing to me. So if they, I used to be a senior sponsor. I just gave it up. So I used to coordinate all senior activities during the year. Mm. So they would come to me with ideas, and sometimes those ideas will get knocked down. It wasn't based just off, and I'm just a realistic person. That wasn't only because the principal said, hey, I didn't want to do that. There's a lot of things that they knew that we couldn't do because of legalities and, insurance-based stuff. So I went into it with just passion. I put passion behind everything that I do.
Sure.
And but at the same time, I had to be professional when I do that. So I'm very confident.
Sure.
In my abilities and my stances. I know I can't get behind certain things. I know some things just has to stop or can't happen, but I pick and choose based off of just what is realistically possible.
How long you been teaching?
This is my ninth year.
The ninth year. What, coming into this career field, what were you expecting, and how does that contrast with what you actually saw? Year one.
Expectations were, I thought I was coming in to help everybody. And not verbally stating, but I just thought I was, because let me just explain how I became a teacher. Mm. I became a teacher by attending, you ever been to your kids' ceremonies at the little elementary?
Sure.
And I'm a tech person, so let me just get that out of the way. I'm one of those, I like buttons. So I would always see teachers, coaches, and those assemblies with a little microphone up to the speaker.
Struggling.
And I'm looking up, I see speakers and sound system. I'm like, why they don't, you know, that's literally how I became a teacher. I said, you know what? I could be utilized. I have a lot of different talents. And I wanted to help.
Sure.
So I came in it with the intention to help. And then I think year one, random guy who was having something at our school, he pulled me to the side and said, hey, you know, you can't help everybody.
Hmm.
And that was after he heard about me. Hey, I can do it. I can do it.
Was that hate or great advice?
It was great.
Yeah.
Mainly because the experience over the years, I understood that I was overwhelmed with everything that I was trying to do. Now, I do a lot, but I still don't put that in front of any other teacher, because every person that works in education, from the person that greets you outside to the person that cleans the floors or the custodians or the principal, everybody has multiple roles in education.
Mm.
Everybody does more than they actually want to do.
Yeah.
But I'm one of those people who actually want to do more. And that's the difference. That's kind of what deciphers the educators in the buildings.
Yeah. I don't know if you mentioned, but you're at a high school, correct?
I'm at a high school, yes.
I want to frame kind of the time.
It's high school. And it is a difference. When you first become an educator, they ask you, where do you want to teach? They're either going to say high school, junior high, elementary is specified. You're going to fifth grade English, yeah. Third grade math, or, you know, they want you to specify where you want to teach at, whether it's pre-K, something like that. But they want you to specify. And everybody will tell you similar stories or different. Elementary is somewhat more easier, I feel. I've only been at a high school. But it depends on their experience. Everybody says that junior high is the worst.
Yeah,
one of those stages where everybody, they're trying to learn themselves and express themselves. But
I see that developing. I got five kids. Two are out of beyond high school. My son, number three, the third child is a senior this year. Then we have a fourth and a sixth grader. So the sixth grader going into seventh grade, which here is different than where I grew up. Like sixth, seventh, and eighth were together. There wasn't a separation in fourth and fifth in my area. So that was new to me. But just starting to see the things that she's dealing with and how she's managing situations and what situations are presenting in sixth grade, I can see where that seventh and eighth grade is going to be probably more pivotal than I expected.
They're very active.
Understatement. or a clean way to
yeah
a clean
they're
way
very
to say
active.
So let's talk about the children, because you're a father as well, and we'll get into that. But right before we started, I mentioned that I wanted to kind of understand who you see as the representations of the children at school, because the parents know what they send to school. They don't often know how they're represented at school. So like, what are some of the things you're seeing, positive and negative?
Ooh, that's a whole bunch.
We got time.
Let me just start out with saying, one of my great principals said that, parents are sending us the best that they have. So no matter where you are teaching it, parents are sending them the best that they have. And my ideology about how to change the world, per se, is at home. How do government get into the household? How do education get into the household? Because the most important thing is the household. If I can reach your household and have that support, we can change the world and everything that's in it. If people don't agree with politically that certain things, okay, let's see how you are at home, and I promise you we can make a difference in your life. So in education, there's no difference. So with that said, they send us the best that they have, and depending on the areas that you're at, that you teach in, you're going to get a difference of activity and motivation. These days, a lot of kids lack motivation, and different cultures are different. They work differently, but the motivation is very important. I'm calling for a state of emergency in education all around, not just students, not just administration, not just teachers, everybody, parents, everybody. There needs to be a reevaluation of self and have some type of accountability.
Sure.
It's what's missing in education. So pretty much what you see in high schools, we're going to speak about high school because that's what I see, but I've heard that it's similar in junior highs. The lack of motivation, technology is very distractive to the education environment. Those are the main things. Technology, technology, technology.
Devices.
Devices, phones, headphones. I still don't understand. My son, I love you to death, son. But I tell him to take them off when we're in public, things right. like that. And I try to be balanced there. Hey, I didn't grow up this way. But at certain times he listens, but when we're out, I'm like, hey, can you take your headphones off?
Yeah. I realize how soft I am as a parent in contrast to my parents, which is some of it is expected. But there was never a time me living in my parents' house where they could call me and there'd be a reason why I didn't hear them.
Mm-hmm.
Like my son, who's here now, we could test it. I don't want to embarrass myself. But like we've had the discussion several times, and it's like a natural, it's not like a screw you dad thing.
Right.
It's like a, I'm on my game. Okay, well, keep one ear off. You know what I'm saying? Because like your responsibility to this house, like you have younger siblings, especially if they're here with him alone.
Right.
And I come in and I'm calling him, and one of his younger siblings has to go get him to say, dad's calling you.
Happened, yeah.
Live it. Like I'm living. And I'm trying to explain to him, like, son, you gotta be accountable. There's more to you in this house. You wouldn't know if there was an emergency, but I promise you, it's like a natural, they just drift back to it. And I can't, another thing that kind of torques me is my kids not being aware of their environment, especially when we're in public. You know what I'm saying? And it's like you have no idea what's happening around you is a very, very, very dangerous place to be.
So imagine everything that you just said inside of a classroom that you're supposed to be paying attention to. Everything that you said is exactly what goes on in that classroom, and we deal with it on a daily basis. So let's just dive in. As a teacher, expectations is for the student to come in and have somewhat of a desire to learn whatever we have in that class. That's ideal, right? Yeah. This is a perfect world.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's differences in a cultural thing and or depending on where you come from. 90, I'm going to throw a number out there. 90% of them come in with devices and that are a distraction during class.
Yeah.
Now, depending on how lenient you are the rules. They're not supposed to have them. Let me just say that in every school.
Well, the schools give them it now.
Right.
Tablets or.
Right.
Yeah.
But like I said, it depends on the school, depends on where you come from. But we're not giving it to them, but it's a distraction. And some people handle the different schools handle them different. But when you come in a classroom, you are to be at attention and at least have some type of desire to learn.
Sure.
But that is one of the biggest issues inside the classroom because it starts there. I tell my students all the time, we're adults and I can't listen to somebody talking over here and listen to this person talk. I just can't do it.
Yeah.
So how are y'all looking at your phone and you saying, oh, I heard you, mister. You didn't.
Yeah.
And you tried it. You test people. Hey, what did I say? And a couple of them may try it and to do both and say they'll repeat and regurgitate whatever I said, but most of them won't. They're not paying attention. So that's why I said I'm calling for a state of emergency for everybody in education because even educators allow these things. We have to be confident as an educator to say, hey, put your phone away. And then there's rules in place.
Yeah.
If you don't put it down, I'm able to take it the first time that I saw it, but I'm trying to allow you to discipline yourself. But that is the main thing that goes on in every school, even elementary. Now, elementary is a little different, but from junior high on up, that is a big distraction. That's what's going on. But that starts there. And then you're not even learning.
So here's some of the challenges that I'm seeing because our kids are such a range. I got 21 and a 10-year-old. So I know the 10-year-olds and the 11-year-olds that are going to school with those kids, parents are probably from a different generation, could be from a different generation than me. There's no way on earth that my dad or my mom would come to a school and defend me for having something taken away that I wasn't supposed to have.
Right.
How does that look now? Because you said, you know, there's a warning, we can take it away. But it seems to me now that that's even risky because some of the parents are so combative. Like they're coming in. I've heard stories. I don't know what your experience is, and I want to get to that. But they're so busy defending their child at whatever cost that they can't even understand that the teacher is telling them that this is a distraction and I'm just abiding by the rules. Like, what are you seeing in that lane?
It happens every day. But that's where the piece of the confidence that I say as a teacher, I know where I stand. And I also remind people that I'm a father at the same time. I tell my students at the same, I'm treating you just like I would my son. And anything that I say that you might get offended by, go tell your parents because I said what I said. I said, sometimes I'll tell a student, I may shouldn't, but sometimes I may tell a student, I don't like the way that you're acting right now. Or
that's taboo to say that. Like,
no, I said I may not should be saying it,
but that's what I'm saying. Like, why would that be off?
But look, my tactic is to say something that gets you at attention so that you can tell your parents so they can. I dare your parent to come ask me about something you did wrong. I dare you.
I got you.
So I'm confident in that area. Not a lot of people are.
Yeah.
I dare you to tell your parents what I said. And it's not disrespectful. It's saying, hey, you doing something wrong. Your parents should be ashamed or something. Like, it'll be something to that nature.
Gotcha.
And I dare you to go tell them. And I'll say that. I dare you to go tell them. Right. And they won't because you're not going to come up here to defend and then just to kind of go against it. That's how I combat that. But I've seen parents protect their kids when they're in the wrong. It might be the most minorest thing.
Yeah.
They'll say, what if I need to contact them? And I was like, man, and I asked them, what did you do when you was in school? Because I'm 40. So I'm like, what did you do when you was in school? You didn't have a phone.
Yeah.
So it could wait. Every student, they'll try to tell me as a teacher. I say, put your phone away. They'll literally be talking on the phone.
The put parent? Your phone.
No, the kid.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay.
In class, they'll be talking on the phone. And I say, hey, get off the phone. Put your phone away. This is my mama, and I'll respond very, very harshly sometimes. I don't care. Right. I say it loud so that your parents can hear me. But see, not all teachers are confident like that. And that's why I call for a state of emergency for all education aspects. because we have to do our job at all costs, and the parents have to do their job. And the students, they'll get the effects of all of this. Yeah. If we're responsible as teachers to hold that child and that parent accountable, as well as that administrator and district, then it can be a better place for everybody.
So I saw where you've been, I imagine, nominated several times, but also won the award for Teacher of the Year. I don't know if it was school or district, whatever it was, it was a feat. So you figure something out that gets the job done, commands the respect to a degree, at least that you're looking for, and connects with the children. What are you doing? Why do you think that you're faring so well in that regard, while others? Well, I don't even want to contrast you with others, but like, why? How do you think you? What's the secret sauce?
Lead with intentions. I think that I lead with intention. Everybody that knows me, good or bad, my intentions were pure and good, and it never is never evil. So I have a passion. Let me back up. I have a lot of talents that I knew that if I kept to myself, what does that do?
Sure.
It doesn't do anything for anybody. So I knew that I have a lot of different talents. So the accolades that I've reached are just based off the different talents and the way that I treat people. I my ideology of education is transparency, because I don't tell everybody every piece of my business, but I am real with people to know that, hey, it's okay to say this and let you know that I'm not perfect, right? But was just to speak as a teacher. No, I'm not the perfect teacher.
Right.
It's just because I've gotten Teacher of the Year for my school, as well as nominated to go for Teacher of the Year for the district.
Yeah.
And then that brings upon different accolades, just because you're recognized there. And I think I got Teacher of the Year for the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
Things like that. So it just comes with the territory. And those things are just because you're in those spaces. Even having those titles, that's not saying I'm the best teacher in the world. I will never be place myself against. And I like you said, you don't want to put me up against other teachers, but I'm confident in myself.
Sure.
But at the same time, I don't compare myself to someone else, because it just doesn't compare.
Yep.
Not because I'm better or I'm worse. It's just they're individuals.
Yep.
But those, I think I got those things just because of my passions and my intentions with the students. That's first and foremost. I'm always doing it for them. It's not me.
Mm-hmm.
And every teacher spends their own money out their pocket for something they do at school. Throw that out there.
So when asking for donations, it's necessary.
No, it's most definitely necessary.
Yeah.
Even the government, they only give you what, $300 of taxable income to put on your taxes as a teacher. If that's your occupation, they only give you like $300. And then of course I coach and teach, so I spent that maybe in 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, gotcha.
Just to try to, you don't have to do these things, but in order to keep the kids coming back and interested, you don't want to, like, I coach golf and they're out there for 5 hours and we miss lunch, right? So if they're not prepared or brung lunch or something like that, most of them don't.
Mr. Dangerfield got me.
They probably think that now. I try not to have them think that way, but I do try my best to take care of them. I don't want to.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Do per se, because it can get expensive. And I've came up with different things to kind of offset that, to raise money and for my golf team. But it's just with the territory. You're either going to do it and they starve, and they eat, or you don't do it and you sit back and they just kind of starve. And like, it's 5 hours and walking.
Okay, it's a lot. And it's a lot.
Yeah.
So teacher and father, how many kids?
I got one.
He's a senior this year. Yeah. Okay. Is there a difference between the two roles at home? Do you turn one off and turn one on? And like, is it, or can you? And your son is in your school, right?
No,
he's in different school.
He's in a different school, okay.
Thank God for him.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'll pop up.
And I'm sure.
So he respects the way that I think.
Okay.
And I try to give him game. Hey, as a teacher, I can see what your grade is. I can tell what you're doing and or not doing. I can tell that. I grade all the time. And I teach high school. You're in high school. So, like, I understand. Ooh. And I try to navigate it like that. But fatherhood don't turn off.
Yeah.
I talk to the kids at the school as if I was their father. Mm. I don't do anything that would go outside of that. And that's kind of where a lot of adults get it mixed up. They can turn it on and off. And I think if you come at it, every educator should act like they're a parent because you're around students and kids. You shouldn't have to
maybe turn more than their actual parents are.
Right.
Yeah.
And every situation is different. Mm-hmm. But my son comes first.
Let me ask you this, and it may or may not be a question that makes you think too hard. Which role more informs the other? Are you a better father because of your teaching experience? Or are you a better teacher because of your fatherhood experience?
Good question.
Got him.
I am a better father because of my teaching experience.
Hmm.
And I think it kind of is vice versa. But coming into a career where you see so much good and bad,
yeah,
within students, you automatically compare that to your child. And I want the best for my students at work, but at the same time, I want the best for my child. So it allows me to be more lenient to him in certain areas, mm-hmm, because I know what their generation is up against.
You got the data.
I got the firsthand data. Yeah. And I try to tell him that all the time, but I try to be lenient with that. I'll say, okay, even with the headphones, I'm like, okay, I don't get it. We don't get it. But
yeah,
hey, I need you to listen. So he's even riding in the car, he'll move that one to the side. I know he's, and I try to tell him, he knows that I just break out in random conversation. So over the years, he knows to leave this one off so that he can hear what I say. And I know he's listening to music. I try to put on music in the car to, you know, accommodate him.
Same.
But he listened to music. I allow him to do that. But he tries to do both. And that's what I'm trying to get him out of, because even that's all kids. Like, you can't possibly focus in this world doing two things at once.
So let's pull it through.
That's the old saying, you can't walk and chew gum at the same time.
Some. But some is a difficult task. Let's stay on music for a minute, because that's a theme that's come up on the platform. In I guess two different capacities. Like, one, it's more than music, right? So it's not just the beat and you bob your head and it's what everybody's listening to. And then the other piece for me is, like, how hypocritical am I to today's music? Like, when you say I put on stuff to accommodate them, I started trying to do that too. Part of me is like, am I reinforcing these messages? I mean, depending on, and I'm talking specifically to me, I'm not putting this on you and your son, what he listens to. But some of it is trash technically, and some of it is trash subjectively, just because I'm from a different era.
Right.
But then I've been in instances where I try to introduce them to my stuff. Like, I threw on Mobb Deep, right? And I guess even the name is kind of indicative of what they talk about. I threw on an instrumental and I started rapping.
Right.
And we got to some of the lyrics. I was like, ooh. Say, you know what, son? We listen to just as much damaging stuff as you're listening to. It just came across different. He was like, yeah, it's pretty bad what I listen to now. So for you, what is it like? Do you accept the new in its entirety and just address it as a phase, or just that's what the young people do? Is there any, and for me, there's guilt. So I'm not telling you to feel guilty, but it's like, I'm at a place in my life where I know that stuff had an effect on me. I can objectively look at it now because I don't push it in my head every day, like force it in every day to stay relevant. But I know I listened to it and I know I got over it.
Right.
But the dad me says, you're listening to this, it's going to do something to you now. And I don't want to see that happen. Like, what are your thoughts on the music? If you're dealing with questionable lyrics, anything like that, or if you, like, what's your position on it?
Man, let me reiterate. I was a DJ.
Touche.
So that makes a difference of how I.
Oh, you was moving people parent, with music.
Right?
Yeah.
So I tried to have a balance, and that's going to be my next book. It's talking about balance in life. Balance is the key to life.
Ooh.
And that's what I really think. That's going to literally be my next book. Balance is the key to life. So
I got an argument for that.
So let's go. So when I was raising my son, how I'm raising my son, I tried to meet in the middle. So,
as a single dad.
Okay. So I tried to meet in the middle. I tell him, don't play anything with curse words out loud around me and or any adult. I can't say, I understand how society is going to be, and I know you're going to come across things that I can't stop.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't live in a household with me, right?
Mm.
So that's the main part. I can't control everything. But when you're around me, just as long as you're respecting how I'm doing things as well, I expect you to do that for everybody else.
Yeah.
So music is very... blatantly vulgar these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But our parents would say the same thing.
Right. But they never heard mine. And that's why I tell him.
True story.
They never heard mine.
True story.
I never played any, till this day, I don't cuss around my anybody that's older than me around family. Like, I just don't do that.
I don't cuss on hit. Well, I don't cuss at all, Ma.
But yeah, we don't cuss at all. Yeah,
at all. That might come out.
But, I just tell him, I just try to be meet in the middle. Hey, don't play any of that out loud.
Yeah.
So as a teacher, I'm around students all day long. As my students on the bus, I'm a baseball coach on the bus. They know Dangerfield don't allow cussing in his classroom. Now, do they do it? Yes. But I try to allow them to fix themselves.
Yeah.
But the music part, there's no tolerance. There's zero tolerance. Hey, turn it. If you can't Google search such and such with clean lyrics, then I don't want to hear it. That's the balance for me. And I don't agree with it. Sometimes I listen to some of the music that they play. I'm like, I repeat, you know, you got to stay in tune with them. Sometimes I'll just bust out on God, just everything. I'll just say, try to keep up with them just to make them laugh, just to make sure they understand. I'm not, like, I actually am a DJ. I played, I can't criticize y'all knowing that what I've made people move to.
Yeah.
So that's my, it's a balance there.
Pass the chore. You responsible.
Right.
You responsible.
And so I try to tell my son, like, hey, just enjoy the music. Don't make the music your life. Don't live by this music. Make it, music is a feeling. Music is supposed to pull out some type of emotion. We all gangsters at some point in our cars.
Air pistol so many people.
People don't understand. Hey, they be like, Mr. Dangerfield, you listen to Young Dolph? Yeah, I don't know all of the lyrics. I didn't buy anything, but I will put it on Young Dolph's Pandora station because it's just a feeling that you want to have at that moment. And we, you know, Jeezy, we've had more gangster stuff that we've listened to back in the day, but that wasn't who I was. Don't let that music define you.
Gotcha.
You can define what type of music that you are. So my in between was that me and my son connected in the lyrical rap.
Yeah.
With your J. Cole's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I took him to his first concert, was Kendrick Lamar.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in dad mode, like, you know, you're a parent, so you know your kids do something, you get that shot of dopamine and like, oh, yeah. I'm so proud. Yeah. Like, cause he was rapping some lyrics. First of all, I was like, how you know that song? It was a song that he had. I was like, in my head, you know, and this that coming of age type piece of fatherhood. It's like, and I only got one, so you can imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
So my mix was, I played a lot of that stuff around him as he grew so that he understands that, hey, I play music around him. I play hip hop around him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm listening to R&B most of the time, but when he get in the car, Cordae, he put me on Cordae.
Cordae is nice.
J. Cole.
Coast Contra is nice too.
We connect on that, and it's just a balance.
Yeah.
No, you can't. I'm not going to play anything vulgar around you, so don't do it around me.
Yeah. And I think they can find an argument for how there's a parallel or there's an example of anything that we would take exception to in our era that we take exception to in their era.
Right.
Like, what are they talking about? Pull-up Dos Effects. I mean, it's like it's all of those things, and we just were into it with the masses, and it was accepted. It was our different thing. So now that they have their different thing, I try to be mindful of, again, being a hypocrite. But I think part of parenting.
I think a lot of these generations, this is my experience. A lot of generations now feel like they can go against the grain more so than we did. Hey, I can question anything you say and or do.
Oh, okay.
Because that's what I mean. Yeah, like they can question everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I try to balance that. I'm like, yes, but. Most of y'all do it in a way that you disrespectful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The tone of voice is very, it matters a lot.
Yeah.
So watch how you say it. You can ask me a question and you can, hey, dad, why I can't do that? You can say that, but you can't say.
Mind your tone, mind your face.
There you go.
Mind your tone, mind your face. As a dad, so this is a platform where we speak through the lens of fatherhood because that's what we are. Mm-hmm. Not every man is a father. Every man is a son. So that's the whole premise behind Dear Son. But the tagline is what I wish my father told me. So I'm gonna kind of pivot the conversation a little bit to see where it goes. I skipped over your relationship with your dad.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something we can discuss?
Yeah.
What was it like as early or as late as you wanna?
I was raised mainly by my aunt. Let's start there. My dad's side. My mother is still in my life. My dad is still in my life. But my dad had a stroke about 15-ish years ago.
Hmm.
And it was a terrible stroke. And he lost he was paralyzed. He lost voice. He lost everything. He gained everything back other than memory and speech. So to this day, he can't talk. And this was post high school. So this is everything after high school. I didn't have these experiences that you would want with your father.
Wow.
And I never thought about that until I got older, right?
Yeah.
My experience with my dad.
Wow.
He was around. He did the best that he could. And but I was raised by my aunt mostly. And I know my mother, I love my mother to death. I was with my aunt from kindergarten to graduation almost. I was with my mom in between there.
Ever together? Your mom and dad were together?
Before, yeah. When we were, me and my sister, I have one sister. And when they were younger, they were together. So love everybody equally. Never thought of anybody as differences in my family.
Sure.
You know, everybody always get older and they pull from those, oh, because my dad didn't do this or my mom didn't do this or I didn't have this. I don't quite think like that. There's some emotions there somewhere, but I don't think like that. So my relationship with my dad was, you know, we were good. He was very laid back. Wasn't very much the disciplinaire. I was a good kid. So I didn't have to be disciplined much, but we hung out. We had just a basic relationship. And, I can't say he taught me a whole bunch.
Yeah.
But I learned a lot off of life itself and my aunt versus, just like direct what we're trying to do.
Yeah. So that's interesting. I mean, we never had anybody on the platform with that. Of course, your story is your story, but even remotely similar to that. There was a guy that I went to school with. He came on a platform and said his dad didn't tell him much, but he taught him everything. So he learned through observation, and his dad made sure he was demonstrating certain things, you know, in and around him. But as you were saying, I got stuck on how frustrating that would be for me to not be able to do something because I'm incapacitated in a way, right? To not be able to show my son something that I want to show him because I physically can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, well, I don't have to wonder because I can ask you, how does that impact? Do you see life different because of that? Like, does it make you take more care or seize opportunities more? Because
most definitely, I didn't have any bad feelings of how I was raised.
Sure.
But I utilize that with the relationship with me and my son. I've never said I wished that my dad would have taught me anything.
Right.
As I get older, I wish I can enjoy certain aspects of life with him, which I still do.
Gotcha.
It's just not in the capacity of verbal conversation and things like that. Like the last thing I just did with him, I went and took him a go-kart. Like, mind you, he lost his memory. He still can move around, but his comprehension is just, you know, not all there all the time. And he learned, he went to rehab, but they couldn't fix the voice or talking. And or you really don't know what he understands. You can kind of get it, but if you walked in here right now, you wouldn't know that none of that. He looks regular, of course, but he can't speak, and you just don't know what he understands or not.
Wow.
And over time, he's learned certain things. So we're still good. I do those things with him because of the relationship I've had with my son. And I didn't really notice that was missing until my son came along.
Sure.
There's a lot of things that I deal with my son. Like, you know, I didn't never had that.
Yeah.
I feel like God has placed me on this earth as one of these soldiers that is strong mentally, emotionally, things like that. I've never really been through anything worth testifying about based off of what the world is going through. I don't feel like mine is more so more important than others. And that doesn't mean I don't have a story, but I just kept mine to myself. And
you feel differently now?
No.
You don't feel like your testimony is worth?
Yeah. This is probably the first time a lot of stuff I'm saying is publicly on record.
Oh, gotcha.
But at the same time, I have this, still have equal respect for everybody in my life. I don't have any, bad feelings for how I was raised. That's only because I feel like where I'm at, where God has placed me in my whole life.
Sure.
I'm okay. That don't mean I don't have no feelings, but.
No. And that's, definitely haven't had that perspective on the show before. So I welcome it. And I can see how the framing of what I wish my father told me could be perceived different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it wasn't out of spite. Like my dad is the show's biggest fan. And he's like, son, it's amazing to see God, how God is developing you, but how you're putting words to things that I didn't figure out.
Right.
And that was based on his relationship with his dad. He lost his dad when he was young, 20 or 21. And we've never, to my knowledge and to the documentation that he has, there hasn't been a son, father, and grandfather existing at the same time since mid-1800s, because that's the documentation. I don't know what happened before then. So there are things that I missed. And he's like, he's been on the platform and he's, you know, he's talked about things that he wished he told me. So it's not a, man, my dad sucks because he didn't tell me that, but it's just like things that I'm recognizing in my generation that weren't, that were different because of the dynamic of the generation prior. It's like, oh, we can change that. If we, you know, we talk about this or we take a different approach. So it's not a negative thing, but it's interesting. Not that your response was negative at all, but it was kind of a, the way it struck me is God knew what he was doing. I'm still good.
And there's
no regret, no malice, which again, that's never the intent.
I think even to dig into that a little bit more, we don't know what we were missing until you see it.
You got a reference. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I didn't see it until my son was born.
Yeah.
I didn't know what was missing. So I based off my relationship with my son, just off of how I felt at that moment. And then even after that, you don't really think. I didn't think, or I can't speak for everybody. I didn't really think, oh, I wish my dad would do. I'm like, I've never said that because my dad's still here. My dad's still living.
Likewise, yeah.
So I had to make more of an effort now, right, because of the situation that I'm in. But it is what it is. I'm one of those people that I'm not going to blame him for the way that he raised me or the way that I was raised or the position that I'm in.
Sure.
I always tell, when I speak in front of audiences and or students, I always say, go do this test, even in class. Go home and tell your mother and or your father, which most of the time is just your mother, right? That's just a realistic thing about our culture.
Mm.
Go home and tell them, I appreciate you, because your parents are doing the best that they can at that moment
with
in their life.
With the information they had, yeah.
Whatever you have in your life, whatever knowledge they've given you, is based off of what they've gotten. Some parents haven't seen what love is.
Yeah.
Some parents haven't seen what success is in order to give it to you.
Yeah.
So don't be so mad at them that they're not providing everything that you desire, because the only reason you're noticing it is you're seeing it around you. You might have saw, hey, they got a car, or oh man, they got the nice shoes, or You're not even reevaluating what your house is. You can.
Yeah.
But I just prefer that you not get mad at your parents, because wherever they at is because they're doing the best that they can at their moment, whether it's mentally struggling to make different decisions, whether it's physically not able to provide for you like they want to. Most of the time it's mental, because a lot of our culture are stuck in mental spaces where they feel like they can't, or they're just comfortable. They're comfortable at living the life in that I don't want to say free zone, but that comfort zone.
In that manner, yeah.
So if you don't know what you're missing, then, and you've gotten through every time you woke up this morning.
The opportunity.
So the opportunity presents itself.
Yeah. We're going to start the rap, man, but you brought it up before I could. God, right? And I met you because we both have a relationship with God that landed us in the same environment for several weeks.
Mm-hmm.
What does God fit into all of this? Like your fatherhood, your education, career. What does God fit in all of that?
God is the core of everything that I do. I just didn't know it until I got older. When I was younger, and I'll go on record saying this, I was ashamed to say I wanted to go to church. And this is post after, you know, you're an adult, right?
Me too.
I was.
Wait, you said after being an adult?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, even younger. Yeah, I was ashamed to say, hey, I'd rather go to church than to go to work or to anything, right?
Yeah.
I didn't express how I felt on the inside. Like I used to be a technician, and I used to actually, I was on the clock, and because of my schedule, I was missing church, and this was years back. I was in Houston, and I would actually stop by church because I needed that fulfillment, right? I needed that gas to fill me up for whatever I was going through just to get that word. Online wasn't doing it for me. I needed to be in the presence, right? But I was always, because I DJed and because, you know, when you drink a lot, I used to drink a whole bunch in college, of course. But it was overshadowed by how I actually felt and on the inside. So God has always been the core of my life. I just didn't give him that respect as I do now. I'm confident in that's just how I live my life as a father. I'm not doing what's right. What I say is right. I want you to do what's right by how it's laid out for you.
So given the life that you live, the experiences that you have, if you had to pick one experience that you learned the hard way that you hope your son learns from your experience and not his own, what would that be?
Listening. Every grown adult, respectable grown adult, wish they would have listened sooner than they did, because we have all been given life's great tidbits as a younger person. We just disregarded it until there's no date, there's no age at a time in a person's life, whether father or mother, where we just get it and we just flip our life around. Right? There's no time period. There's no date on that. The majority of us gets pushed back because of life and the distractions that we have. So, you might be in your 30s, you might be in your 40s. Some people don't do it till their 50s or 60s. They're like, oh, you know what? This is what I should be doing. This is how I should be moving in life. I would just say, my message to him is to listen. Every person, grown person, wish they would have listened sooner than they did. And that's just simple as that. I was a part of 100 Black Men of America when I was in high school. I've always been a decent young man, right? But I didn't get my life together per se until I was as an adult, years later, right? And I'm not ashamed of those bad decisions that I made. No, we'll say they're bad. They just wasn't.
Yeah.
They didn't benefit me for the future. So now everything that I'm doing is benefiting me for the future. And that's the part where you say, when you just get it. You can. There's a balance, and even the argument that you said we have. For me, the secret to life is about balance. Mm-hmm. You can still live a life of dopamine, but yet handle your business at the same time. And no, that's not perfect. I'm not saying that's the only way of living, but I feel like that's one of the things that people can live by. And as he goes to college, I hope he hears that. Hey, go live your life. But live it with discipline and direction.
And decency, if you care.
Decency.
That's questionable.
Accountability. It's a bunch of...
It's questionable. Sometimes you got to live loose.
It's a bunch of words you can say to live it, but you know...
My partner say he loose. Live loose a little bit.
Yeah, there's this ideology that I was teaching in school. It's called utilitarianism.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's living life in the middle. There's no, even speaking of the most righteous person in our culture or in our state of the world, the most righteous person, people probably first think of a pastor, right? But not these days, I'm just saying, but
pre-internet.
Yeah. Right. But, even thinking of a pastor, you and me both know, because of the way our walk is, we know that person is not perfect.
Sure.
Only way they got to the where they could be this virtuous person is because they live life on the other side, just so they can tell you both. And that's kind of the ideology of utilitarianism. You lead life in the middle,
pull from both
for a long, for a period of time, and you will be ultimately become this virtuous person.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of I wish my son would just listen.
That's what I would tell him
and or tell him all the time.
That's dope, man. I think the clock has expired, so we can't have our balance argument. Maybe another conversation.
Right.
And it's not an argument in that you're wrong. It's a perspective.
Perspective, that's it.
And sometimes perspectives yield the same results. They just get to it a different way.
Right.
I've appreciated this conversation. Before we get out of here, I know you got some stuff going on. You said you're writing a book, but you have something out now.
Yeah, I have a book called Yak. It's called You Already Know.
What's that about?
It's pretty much about decision-making, confidence in the decision-making that you make. It's like a 5-step process to making better decisions in life. Mm-hmm. And it's just saying, hey, if you make a decision, make sure you're holding yourself accountable for it, whether it's good or bad. Now, of course, I'm preaching good decisions, sure. But if people are more respectable in this world, if they are confident in the decisions that they make. And I always go to the extreme of the example. Hey, if you decide, hey, I want to go stick up this person to go rob them, make sure that you stand there and tell somebody that you did. I'll respect you more and I'll be more afraid of you because you, oh man, he stood there. Mm. Right. That's just confidence in decision making. I'm not telling people to do that.
I'm just saying, know
that your decisions is affecting somebody as well as yourself. And it's just 5 different steps. And this small book, I love reading, but I don't love reading at the same time. So I made it real thin.
Yeah.
I made it real thin. And I self-published it and, I think I've been out about 2 years, 2 or 3 years now.
Where can they find it?
It's on Amazon. It's also on my website, MrDangerfield.com. And I'm just here. I do some speaking here and there and I'm just trying to do more of that. Just trying to spread the word of, positivity.
MrDangerfield.com. Is that the catch-all to everything about you?
That's what I live by. And of course, mostly in education, people go by your last name.
Okay.
I know where I know people from, but if they call me Carvel or if they call me Dangerfield. And of course, they say Danger.
Same with me.
That's the nickname, of course. But yeah.
Same with me. I appreciate it, man. Thank you for obliging. I know we kind of talked about it. It hasn't been a year.
It's probably been about a year.
A good 7-8 months.
Yeah, yeah. Close to it.
Good 7-8 months, but I appreciate you, man. Always want to shout out my wife. Her book, Chocolate Princess, Volume 1. Great read for your young scholars of color. I would say ages 5 to 15. Very well written. Very well illustrated. It's available on lovekeishaj.com. My book is linked below. Dear Son, 20 Life Prompts to Facilitate Effective Parenting. Gives you some of my perspective and how I arrive at how I think and gives you some journal prompts to do some work in your life and in your home. So if you're ready to do some work, I suggest you get it. If you're not ready to do some work, get it so you have it whenever you're ready to do some work. Always remember to buy black, wear the blacks. And with that, we appreciate you guys. God bless you. Peace.
Months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.